what would this be? I say, why? What purpose would this be?
Well, I'm trying to learn what the pull of the unicorn was to many women around that time where the gold rush in the 1900s, it was just starting to level up. And I just want to know, were there a lot of jobs available or thought women were?
Well, I think probably that was what brought most of them to the territory. It was because of their quality and those jobs. Of that nature, there were some jobs, but you know, the turn of the century, there wasn't that much work for them. They had a certain amount of work.
Wait, was the Yukon considered a quite a tough place of isolation? And not Dawson area as such, but the Yukon itself, was it considered a very isolated and very a land of many hardships to it?
I think it was considered that, yes. People had no idea where the Yukon was, really. It was away up practically the North Pole as far as some people are concerned, and a land of ice and snow always. They don't realize the beautiful weather we have. But many women came in and went into business on their own.
That's what it's like.
Well, then, of course, a lot of women too went to cafes. You had to have cooks, you had to have people working that way, or some of them ran roadhouses. Stores, millinery shops, candy shops, all that type of thing.
Was there must have been a whole group of call for that type of thing in Dawson area. How about White Horse then?
Well, White Horse was always a small settlement. It wasn't too much. But there was times of that many people living there or that many. It was mostly people had to do with work. Stones was served population as well. Back at the turn of the century, I'm not sure what the population of White Horse was, but along in the teens and 20s and 30s, it was about 400 more than that.
There are quite a few summer tourists coming in at that time.
Yes. They didn't stop at White Horse. They would come in over the railroad and down on the seaboats, and then back to my place and out. Or others would carry on and go down to the Alaska and out of Alaska, especially after the railroad. They would go to Fairbanks and down and then from the In Dawson, back in the 20s and 30s, when there was something going on, we used to have two Tuesdays every week. And on Tuesday, we went to Friday, and we'd all set your car by and we'd come home at 8 o'clock in the morning, we'd get into something.
With 4 pounds of fresh down in Dawson?
Well, no, not at that time. Not for used to the ordinary tourist board, because people had their work, you were busy. The first boat of the season always attracted people, or the last boat or the last with a lot of people, yes. The last boat of the season, we were always very happy to see the first boat of the season. That was the time of the fresh food, the bananas, lunches and all that type of thing that probably was We always had oranges during the winter, but there was other fresh fruits that we didn't get, but we always had fresh fruit.
How did you get from the fresh fruit?
the winter time, they play that stage at Christmas time. It's always a joke.
This would help you how your name came in the country.
Yes. They had their own stage that kept them to their 80s. They're also coming in the winter, although a lot of people that use them sneak out. Those of us who live there, we know how long it is, and the berries of the country are taking use. Mostly the dark preserves strong raspberries and berries. I wish cranberries and blueberries. Yes, I guess she did to a certain extent, although she seems to refer more to the social side of Dawson. Everybody didn't have their days at home or their pub nights or that type of thing. Young women are always greatly entertained, especially teachers, nurses, and so they probably went there and got more attention than they did in their own settlements where they were before, and this attracted, I think, many of them. She puts a very good picture on it. Her whatever she thinks is mostly true. And she also refers to herself and she lived with romantic people. She's very familiar with how she lived with teachers. That's the way the teachers used to live in those days. You know, one or two girls would take a cabin sometimes. More than one, or sometimes just one. They had to find their own accommodation. This wasn't granted by the government as it is today.
And how was your life different from her life as a teacher? Were you a teacher yourself?
No, I was a teacher. Oh, I was both my parents. I was raised in Dawson. She wasn't. She was a young woman when she came to Dawson. I was just a child. So, angle on
just a she describes what it's like for a teacher.
Yes.
Yeah, but I was more curious as to how she thinks it's your own life. What different perspective you would have on Dawson other than what she saw in her teachers.
Well, I don't know. To Dawson, this was home to me. I'd been raised there. I came there in 1901, which was a few years before I was at Berkeley, and I do remember this as a small child at that time. When you grow up in a place like that, my father was a miner in the mine on Thames, and after that he worked on the bridges and something. I don't know how many years. But everybody had to live much the same way. We lived on the creeks for years. Didn't have all the facilities that probably some of them had in Dawson, although everyone didn't have, they all had electricity. We didn't have electricity in those days. But everyone had electricity in Dawson. And we did move to Dawson in 1913, where electricity was 40 cents a kilowatt. I do remember that. They was coming. But everyone didn't have running water. Mrs. Burton didn't even her places where she lived. She had a lot of them probably to her place. But when you lived on the creeks, when we generally got here outfit in the fall, and we had transportation back and forth in the very early days, there were stages all the time. We weren't that much isolated. And there were people everywhere. It wasn't as today where you can't even see a house. that anyone in those days or something.
You're finding that a lot of maybe the kids were having a good time.
Oh, yeah, sure, they did that. Schools all along the creeks in various spots. Where I lived on the university, it was actually the university school at the mouth of Last Chance Creek. It was a one-room school, and then it was a few more people, so I forgot that.
Did you have the experience of say you using the discarded things for toys?
I don't remember that too well, I suppose so. We didn't have that many toys. We had Christmas and a Christmas tree as usual, and put up our stockings, which was a
doing the same thing.
I think probably
rely more on themselves for entertainment.
Yes, this is very true. You had to rely on yourself for lots of things, which I didn't do. You had to work probably more on other people, and it wasn't pushed up for anyone.
You had to help with chores and
problems. We had to move in our family and our boys. Especially with the lamps up, and those lamps that we came with the day and the night to film the evening. Those episodes to do. I don't know, I guess maybe my parents cooked more than my mother was always busy because it was always something to do. My mother sewed quite a lot, she didn't have clothes. On top of that, she didn't want to need a work. And then there was the social life as well, because their neighbors would call on one another. They played cards once in a while, sounds and dances and things like that too. It wasn't an isolated life, I don't think. Maybe isolating access to the outside world, but in ourselves we had the population, and they there was a friendship, or it was a different type of life, I think. People were warmer and more interested.
You actually knew and could depend on like your neighbors.
This is very true. And if someone had a big job to do, well, everybody helped do it. Like maybe you were adding a room on your cabin, or you were doing something, or someone had plowed the garden before you, or things of this nature. People did things in those days, and as I said before, you babysat, we weren't expected. We didn't expect to be paid. This was just a neighborly thing to do. I don't think the hardships were that much, really. I think the prairie people had many more hardships than we had. They were further apart to begin with. And 97, 98, may have been even 98 for a lot of people. A lot of people were getting places. But once the roads were built out to the creeks, and they had stages, or we could go to the ground, to roadhouse, and rent a horse and cutter or some buggy whenever we wanted to, if we wanted to. We had our own dog team in the wintertime, which we used to get around with. And these stages went up and down to as far as Granville. And they were daily in the beginning. So we were traveling up there. And you could get into town. Well, in the fall of the year, my people always had put in a big order of staples. And then, of course, you have the odd things in the winter, but you generally find them in the winter.
And was there any
Oh, you had to go into Dawson. Where they lived off, there were two hospitals. And there were quite a number of doctors.
Is anybody saying as many doctors as lawyers?
Well, there were about 35, 36 lawyers, and I think there were almost 70 doctors in there. It wasn't that difficult for some people. Now you hear if it's real cold and you're all around the river, they would have had a harder time getting into town. But the doctors would go on other things, would call, you know, special cases, always horses and covers or something to take you around. Well, we didn't have any ambulance, you know, that we have today. Not in that way. I don't know what the new number of lines we have.
Oh, a lot of different shops. That's a guaranteed.
I presume maybe in the 98, maybe it was a certain amount of that. I think Dawson told now that it was to be a family town. It was considered that there were a lot of companies there, a lot of government officials. These people all were just as people do the world over. They had their homes, their work. Then they were very nice to them. And the dance hall was an average. I think this dance hall was exaggerated. To a great extent, and this is what we're doing today in publicizing the house. You never hear of the family life. You know, you must remember that in the first years, the AC company and the NET company and any number of big mining companies, they weren't all patronizing the dance halls. These people have their staffs. The government people are often even in with a big government staff in 98. And some, I read some of their diaries of different ones. Then Craig talks about going downtown to see the dance, also see the gambling. There was a certain amount of that. And for these men that had no families, probably not necessarily gamble themselves, but they could go down to see what was. But I think it's all
This
is right. The finer points of life in Dawson have been overlooked very much.
Information I'm very much having a to get in Dawson. Yeah. Exactly what happened in Moosehead. I understand that Moosehead was created by Bishop Office to protect Sarah Lee's welfare. And the Gold Seekers came in as the part of Martin Klondike.
Well, I don't know if there's a case of gradually moving there. Throughout the territory, tracts of land were set aside in the early days for Indians to live on. We don't have any treaty Indians, or we don't have Indians of that nature here, but these tracts of land, which is government land, is set aside in New South Wales, one of these places. You can't really call them reserve, but they were always set aside for Indians to live on. How many Indians were there when Dawson was first founded in 96, I don't know. I don't think there was a tribe living there. I think some had lived at Fort Reliance, which is a little down, but I don't think there was much of a tribe living there at that time.
I think it was mainly a fishing and hunting
ground. Fishing and hunting ground, more or less nomads. And of course, Carmack and his group were from Tagish. They didn't belong in that area at all. And they were just fishing there. But then Moosehide was set aside in the early days as the settlement for youths, which he did not want. And they had their own schools. The Anglican Church always had a missionary there. For years, Reverend Tolley was there. He was married to, I think his wife was Mr. Vidal Mayo. Whether she was his daughter or something. And they raised their family there. They went down the Toddy girls. They went to Boston School. Toddy, one of his sons, was a limousine, I think he was 34. And I've forgotten how long he was there. And then after that, there were other people, or if they weren't a religious missionary, they had teachers there. And this carried on until the 30s. And it wasn't until the 40s that they integrated the Indian children into the public schools.
I understand before that time, there was a lot of enfranchisement.
A certain amount of that. There was some, but I don't think there was any. There was probably maybe more around this area. But there were a few there, Charlie Rivers. If you go back to Dawson again, you should go and see Charlie Rivers. Now, he's an old guy there. He was going about the time, you know, and we don't know how the things into. His wife died last winter. But he lives in the house. Yes, his boys lives in. But he was raised around that area. I'm not too sure. I was going to go down and see Charlie. When I was there, but I believe he was a friend. But I don't think there were too many of them. The Indians were looked up to him. Chief Isaac was he was a big man, and I think he had good control over the tribe. Of course, of those things too, we tried to cut the Indians along the upper river cut the up more than 25 miles and also. Or from students, but they did the living of their own lives more than they did today.
Looks like it's worth for strictly
in the new village. There was nothing else there, no stories or anything of that nature at all.
Do you remember offhand seeing
traditional buckskin, things like that? Really, I don't think so. I think they were just good in the wintertime, good warm woolen clothing. A few of them did not, I guess. They did do a good deal of sewing. Monks and sailors. They used to come up in their baskets and all. They used to go around the house. And they were always in stores there. They would have to come to some of the stores for sale. Or else they'd go. Sometimes you house to house yourself. Another thing you used to do is put berries in summer. And of course, fish in the summer. And they probably were in jet. And some of them used to work for the railroads. To work in town or in the team, some of them used to work. I imagine before that they did. I know that Isaac used to do peeling for me. I think it was Mrs. Springer that got the interest in the castle. What you mean by that? You know, life was the same everywhere, I think, all over the world in those days.
Life on the creeks was certainly very, very close to the community.
Yeah.
It was really dependent upon for survival, I guess. And, well, in the sense that favors were shared, and perhaps goods were shared, and you help one another.
Oh, this is very true.
This is very true.
If anyone was ill, you helped them out. If anybody was born, you helped them out too.
Yeah. Was it the same kind of attitude and also in itself?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think this was the world at that time. People were interested in one another. They weren't so indifferent to other people's pleasures or sorrows. You were interested if someone was, joy came to a family, well, you were happy for them. If there was sorrow, well, you were sad for them. And you helped them whatever way you could. I remember one time at the rotor, when we were waiting, a lady was going to have a baby. I don't think they had very much money, but my mother went up and looked after her. Well, they had a little girl, she came down and stayed in our house. You know, you did things like that. I don't know, women. They were homemakers in those days. They weren't looking to be out working or doing that type of thing. So naturally, they were interested in other people and in the lives of other people. When we lived down in Conception, I can remember a young girl who went to Humble Gilgal. And she had ran away from the convent to marry this man. And imagine just a young teenage girl coming up there. I can remember she used to often come back to my mother's because my mother was older than me. And it helped her out. But you know, it's things like this, you have a certain amount of compassion and you help people. Well, or if they don't know how to cook, you help them out and show them what to do. Probably I was very fortunate. A very tough mother. But, you know, there were just all types of people. This woman, she went on, her husband made good money on later on in Keno Hill, but her first year in Dawson up there in Dingo Hill was not, it was pretty grim for a young girl of that age. While she had what others had, but I was just loneliness and coping with it. She got married a little too young. But these things, they happen, they've happened from the beginning of time and they carry on. But I think people have more compassion for one another in those days. You were willing to help.
No questions asked.
No. Well, if no questions are willing to send me, you were going to get along the way. You baked bread, or you gave your neighbor a loaf, or someone was ill, you helped them out. It was always something to do. Time never lagged. I think that makes money. Maybe more for the young people today. They're not that interested in establishing a home. This is it. This is right.
I think for a girl my age, it's a career more than a home or family.
Well, at the turn of the century, this was not so. There were few careers for a girl at home. There even wasn't that much. But I think every little community on the creek was very close knit, and there were many people, you know, there were people all along the creek. Still, you go out today up on the creek, there's nothing. You've got Bonanza, it's about the same. There's a few people mining, but there's nothing settled. They're just there for the summer away. It's not a year-round basis.
I'm not interested in any city that there's a place in that room, transit, something.
Was there any? Our young people today now, some of them may not be ambitious, but it's a trend of the times where they want to travel, they don't stay in one place. And I don't think it's unfair to criticize these people. I find many of them that maybe are not just dressed as we think or look the same. I found them very, very young people. But, in this version of the final editor, I think it was not long ago. I think it's yours. It's the mode and the way people dress and live today.
It's so refreshing to me. It amazes how refreshing it is. So many people, older people, they there's suspicion and there's trust and classification.
Well, I don't think this is going to be done. I'm not sure.
It's a good question.
You can't criticize it. I don't know. Young people have probably been on the road for days and goodness knows what, and I found them very interesting. But they have lots of good points. There's some that, yes, but this has been happening since the beginning too. Maybe many people, they don't always just what was accepted. But I don't know, the young people today have a different outlook than life maybe in some things. And those that take to drugs and things like that, I think it's very sad. But they don't all do that. I'm sure they don't. Just last month when I was in Dawson, there was a couple of young boys that put their tent in there. I was with the Monroes and they had a trailer home and they had a little mobile, but a trailer off of also. But they have this home, mobile home that they live in. And I was living in the trailer, all these lads had put up their tent in the yard there with this Virginia church. Oh, we would talk to them. Of them, they had trouble with their car and had it fixed. So anybody could have called them hippies, probably. Maybe their hair wasn't as cut as neat as possible, and they had jeans on. And they had been traveling for some time, but one night they asked them to see the news. And We had a cup of tea. We ended up by playing bridge with them.
Yeah.
And for three nights in succession, we played bridge and had a fantastic time.
Nice. Oh.
But, you know, you can't, they were lasted one of them. They were still going back to school. They had to go to school with Vancouver boys, but they were just out to see the country. And this is a trend of the times today. Young people travel. When I was young, I couldn't travel. You couldn't get around them. We didn't have the money to defend it. Well, I don't really believe that the government probably should give so many grants for no idea. I really believe people should earn what they want and should not be given too many handouts. I think that if a young person wants to travel across Canada, fine, but make his way or save up his money and do it that way. I don't think the taxpayers should. Probably too many people getting something for nothing, and they're not giving anything. This way they lose their pride. And then they expect everything for nothing. Now, these young men that I lived with, they had been working. They were traveling on their own. But they weren't that well off, but they owned their own car. Had a couple of beautiful big dogs, too. It's gorgeous. But, you know, you can't judge everybody. Now that we found them, very nice young men. And they were quite willing to sit down and play bridge with two old ladies. And had fun. So you can't judge everybody.
So many people do.
This is unfortunate. I've heard about radio operators in different places one time. Last winter, I don't know who it was now, I've forgotten, but somebody was interviewing somebody, and he had one of them here. There's this woman called up, and that would be awful. You know, this is a terrible thing to say when you don't know who the person is.
You could be a son for all you do.
Well, this is true. Who it wasn't, but I mean her son could be in the same. No, it's, we probably treat the young people rather cruelly. We, in our own time, we have done worse. Or wilder, maybe, I don't know. I think sometimes maybe people, they're getting too much, our young people are getting too much for nothing. And another thing, their wages are too big to them. And they're making, you know, $700 a month when they're just out of school, which is not right. Things have gone down beyond all proportion, and it's got to come down. Something has to change. This can't carry on. Because the world can't go on because we're paying too much for it. For what to look at.
It's ludicrous that everyone goes on strike. More money.
Yes. Well, it's just nice that we have to go out.
Right.
Have to go out. Here at Anvil, a couple of months ago, some people got to 1150 something a day more. Well, 1150 a day, this means you're way over $300 a month. And on top of that, they were probably getting $40 to $50 a month anyway. You know what the salaries are? These people are making $40, $50 a day. Nobody's working. They're not giving, because people are not giving enough of themselves to their work today. It's just get through it, get through the day, and get up your check. They don't have the interest in the employer's business. I don't
know. You found a lot of that in the early days of housing.
No, I don't think there's that much. Oh, no, it was a different attitude.
Yeah.
You weren't paid that much. You weren't getting big salaries. $5 a day was a big salary. Oh, yes, much more so. Much more so. And you would help, you know. You weren't 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, or they used to work 10-hour days in those days. But they went to, you know, just all the time. They could, but I mean, they definitely was something that kept them in there for so long. I mean, there wasn't that much of it. Overtime and all this amount of teachers did. But everywhere all changes every so often, so you have to go. Yukon's gone through many phases, I would say. At the turn of the century, it was more of the turn of age and the turn of the sort of life. And then as you go down, it also became quiet and there wasn't that much. 20s and 30s, it began to come up again a bit in the 30s and then the Second World War. And then at the end of the 40s and the 50s, the government of Canada began to spend more money in Yukon, and they saw where we had more potential problem than we thought we had. The mines began to open up. Although when the Peter Red started in 1920, that was really a big boost to Yukon because we were getting down pretty low.
I think that Yukon was
yes. I definitely do. They didn't see the potential. Even after King Hill struck, I don't think they did. But then after the war, the mines closed down more or less on King Hill at that time. The Wernicke mine, almost the Wernicke, was killed. But, and then that was sort of left in the dark. So there was some individual mine, because Keenan Hill Mining Company, which is a group of houses that do subsidiary on the top of Keenan Hill, that had already gone out of operation. And there were a few individuals, but not much. But then after the war, the United Keenan Hill Company took over some of the remaining property and some of the property that was available, and it brought the Eagles back and more companies came. But the dredging would also be the two things.
Pretty much being about the White House Newcomer, 1982 and 1938, there's not one new locomotive coming to town. Well, the thing about the freight rates were earlier, I think, being gone.
Which was low, there wasn't that much. But there was a certain amount of silver and ore coming on the hill, but that was about all. And then in the territory of that time, there was some building in the late 30s, 40s. Of course, during the war years, that changed a bit. But you said from 1928 to 1908 to 30. Yes. There, you see, the gold was really the biggest resource in the territory, that placer gold, and that shipped in bricks or dust and went by mail express. Whereas then, when Keogh started in 1920, then they started shipping the ore from Keogh down the Stewart River and then up the Yukon River. And that carried on until Second World War. But that wasn't, I suppose, that much. It was, it meant a good deal to the territory. The podcast of the country improve or update their equipment that much because it could carry on the level of that.
Over the years, there have been much of the so has caused those changes. Seeing in the life of people, the ways of looking at things, and could you speak of any specific things that you feel have changed a lot?
Other people?
Yeah. the Highway, the Depression?
Well, the Highway definitely brought a change. I don't think the Depression affected the youth on at all, because at that time we had the Highway. A lot of people came to UConn during Depression years and eked out a living in some form or other, and some of them remained on to do well some of the time. It was, I guess they had heard that we could find out much of a depression in UConn. Yes, I mean, there was no rush. Over the years, you know, there was various times in the UConn, like the, as you say, it was probably in 1900, it was probably all over. Well, I don't say it was all over. I don't think the gold rush was all over by any means, but there was another gold rush in Nome at that time. And people went from Dawson north to Nome, because many people in Dawson didn't have rich friends. And they were always looking for this everlasting gold that they'd make something rich. Many of those that went to Nome back in the day came back to Dawson. And things carried on to a certain extent in the 1904-5 region. And I'm not sure if it was, but then in 1905, Fairbanks was struck, and that was a rich reservoir. And many people went through Fairbanks. Still there, but it was still alive. And we lost quite a lot of people at that time. And it was about that time also that the dance halls and the gathering places were closed up. So I would say from then on, Constantine had a very quiet composure. It wasn't, you know, it was a strictly a family time, and people working. Mining companies and places of business in town. And then we went on to the war started in 1914, the first war. Well, Joe Burrow formed the company and sent, but that was only 50 men that left, but quite a number of people did leave on their own to go and join different companies or depart overseas, and they were usually connected during companies in their own place, or others went to other parts of Canada. And then in 1916, Joe Borough wanted to come in. And I believe that was 150 men. I don't know, I think that was supposed to be the strength of the company. And this took a lot of people on the bus. And that had a very saddening effect on them. And it struck the economy of the country. And at that time, they were beginning to think of reducing government stamps and whatnot. The commissioner's residence was closed. The courthouse had been closed. And I think we only had one judge on the bench at that time. In the very early days, we had three judges on the bench. You see, there was a gradual reduction. And then in 1918, there was more of a reduction in staffs and government staffs and whatnot, which cut down the country. And then again in 1918, the Sophia sank. And that took quite a number of families from the province that never opened, returned, or parts of families and the rest left the country. You know, that was a hard blow. I forgot just about how many Dawson people in the morning had to go. So then he always struck the scene in 1919, and people started going there in the 20s, and many people went from Dawson to Mayo then in the 20s. You had to follow along where you thought you could get work. And Mayo got to be quite a booming little town in the 20s. It was good unit building there. The hospital was built in Mayo. We always had a Mayo recorder's office there, and I think that increased some Mr. Gillespie had it. 20. I went to Mayo in 1920. I walked to the top of Kino Hill in 1920 from Mayo. 3-day trip. Well, we went one night from Mayo to Minto, and then we went from Minto on to the top of the hill. We were one day, I stayed at this Mrs. Walsh's cabin, so there you go, when she was a very young girl, first married. She came and came to her house, she was in the room, her husband was in the room, so I went with another girl, a teacher, her father was thinking, he was afraid of it. I was taking some minor's outfits up to the top of the hill. So, of course, it was no room on the landing for us. However, with this, then the population of Mayo increased to give you a year. So then Mr. Wernicke came in. I believe it was 23 when he opened up a mining there. He was a representative of Treadwell. He called the mining company. And well, he called the Treadwell. He got his Treadwell company in Juneau. It was that capital that was in effect. And that carried on until the late 30s. And then the war came on and these places closed down. And then I would say during the 30s it was rather quiet. But we did have a certain influx, but the dredging carried on in Dawson. Then Yukon consolidated. They had taken over the oil operations. And they began expanding in their dredging in the late 20s and 30s. And then that, of course, came out in 1966. But then when the warriors came out, of course, pipers developed. And before then, it was just a sleepy little town. There was very little. What a pipe horse was before that was from Hawkins Street to and up back, it didn't go much far beyond the Catholic Church. And then during the war years, when all these big companies came in, there were many big construction companies that came in and took up land, and then the town site had to be increased. This is a White Castle on this town site. And they had to add to it when the federal land site. And new additions were added to it, not in the size of it is today. But right off the bat, they had to add additions, wasn't enough to add more. And from that time on, my horse had to, gone ahead. And then in the late 40s, it was talk that in the capital, not nonsense, where all the rooms go to the government was. And this was not particularly well known, objected to it very much. And for a long while, it was only talk. Then we seemed to change in 1946. And the chief executive of the territory, who was then Stiles controller, he thought he was retired. And then Mr. Gibbons appointed to controller. Well, then they changed the name back to commissioner a couple of years afterwards. But there was quite a change in commissioners. They began from then on, up, well, almost the present time, this man has been 8 years, so I guess he's fairly long, but there was. Mr. Gibbon was in until 1950, and then we had about 49 of this one, so he was created a judge. Then it was Mr. Gibson for just a year, and then Mr. Fraser, who was a former employee of the department, he was sitting as chief executive, but he was here for 1 year. And then after that, in 1953 we moved to Whitehorse, but before that Mr. Brown came into Dawson because it was taken back, and so things, our finances and whatnot, we were trying to assess the uniforms and things like that. Two of them ministered for a while after Mr. Brown was on his second year. Then Mr. Brown was commissioning, and then we moved to Whitehorse in 53. And after that, you know, there have been changes right along since then. But once the capital moved here to Whitehorse took on a more permanent feature. The federal building, where the post office is, that was where we moved into that in 54. The first year we were here, we lived in had the more permanent parts of building down by the school and all the history. That was the building system. But everything since then has gone. And the building becomes more elaborate. I think it must have been a good house. But the new capital is not good. Sometimes I think maybe we've gone a little too far, because we're still frontier town, but we're taking on all the aspects of the big city. And still a small population, because you can't say that you have that large a population. 20,000 people for the whole territory. Well, this can be put in a very little spot in other parts of the world that wouldn't consider very much. But we do have a young population. I get amazed every time I go to a function. Yeah, you know, they are. And a lot of teenage people, we must have a very growing population in that building. The movie show at here in the lineup, we didn't get in because the place filled up. But they were all young people, very young people. Teenage people, but I said to him, my friend, no old people here at all. And this is becoming very evident in my eyes. The old people that there are of them, I guess they stick in one corner.
Don't come up to me.
You don't. But it, now last night I was down at this Cambridge or this Aquinas show. And it was all young people. There were a few older people, but it's amazing. It's a young person's town right now, and I think Whitehorse will go along. I really do. Yeah. It's a different way of living than what we lived in the olden days. It's different. But this is all over the world. This is here. You can't sustain it like that.
You had your choice. Which life would you want?
I really don't know. Sometimes I think I was born too soon as it was. Probably I should belong more in the Victorian age. I rather like the nice life, but not the grab. However, it's a good thing to say. It is. But people are not as happy today, I'm sure. They don't get as much out of them. You don't get as much out of your friends. People don't have time for anybody anymore. But I don't think we can change people away back in the 90s didn't appeal to people in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And that was supposed to be a very daring age. Today you don't apologize. But I think we can learn from the new people. I really do. I don't know whether you're more spontaneous. I think we enjoy it. What are the young people aiming at today?
I've been a lot of them. Very career-oriented.
They have ideals?
Very much. Ideals. Higher in the class. I think there are so many of them.
They're not real, though. They're not, too.
Not at all. Real in the sense that they're practical. There seem to be a lot of thinkers and very little doers. To try and get somebody out to play a game of badminton or any sports is next to impossible.
This is real.
I find this. I mean, a lot of people are more interested in having a discussion of sorts. When I deal with the discussion, discussing the world problems, politics, there's a lot of very kind of a lot of interest in politics, which I think is part of it.
No, it's but interesting.
They seem to
they're very deep though.
Yeah.
They?
Yeah. Very much.
And what is the attitude, is it?
One of change. There's a great awareness of each culture in the world. And a lot of people are very idealistic. What is this culture here? We should take this part from this culture and introduce it into our culture. And of course, some of it's good, but if they don't seem to have any fun for life in the sense of the sports or any activity, outdoor activity, so it seems to be our intellectual opportunity.
Isn't that good?
Well, I think one needs a balance both.
Yeah. You can't have two beliefs, you don't need two. We can't change the world, that's for sure. I have a friend that has a couple of girls. Well, she has a boy and two girls. And these children are not sporting all the time. And they don't want to do things. And one's a very good student. Well, I guess both girls are, but one's exceptional. But the boy only thinks about driving a horse and doing things mechanically in order. He's their image of it. As for sports and for playing hockey, although the girls don't expect you from having to be sure. But they've just got no competitive sports in them at all. I think it's in sports you do mix with your with the rest of your age group, and you get to probably tolerate them and understand. I don't know, I have young friends that are so sports. And they're into everything now. This fall, this